This is The Jump Around with Jim Rutledge and Pablo Iglesias, streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel.
And welcome in to the Jump Around 3.0. I am Jim Rutledge, and yes, I did buzz my head down a little bit. Cut my hair short, Riley. Pablo Iglesias, he is out on assignment. He is enjoying his time off. So I have you for the next, 40 minutes along with Riley Yauch. And we're going to be joined by Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. And we're going to be joined by Rob Wheelwright, a former Badger wide receiver, to see what he's been up to and catch up with him. So we're excited for that. So a full show today. We don't have a lot of time, Riley, before Adam Rittenberg joins the show. So I want to get started with your Alabama adventure. And why don't you set the scene here and then play this video that could be a little bit depressing for Badger fans.
Yeah, it was, I won't say I was totally surprised at what I discovered. I went down to Hoover, Alabama to watch my buddy play for Missouri at the SEC baseball tournament. And I figured while I was there, there's lots of Bama fans. They should know Wisconsin. I'm sitting next to a bunch of Mizzou parents who are there to watch their kids play. And I was like, you know what? Let's see what people down south think of the Badgers. And it turns out, not much. So here's my interaction with a parent of a Missouri baseball player.
Riley Yauch, ESPN Madison, here with Phil. He's a Missouri fan, both cheering for the Tigers today. And Phil, I gotta ask, when you hear Wisconsin Badgers, what comes to your mind?
How do I figure out who they are? I've never heard of Missouri first baseman
number 28. That hurts. Thank you.
My bad.
Now, how much of that do you think is because Wisconsin doesn't have a baseball program?
That's possible. He could just be a baseball dad. But I feel like down south, football is king. And I feel like outside of the past couple of years, Wisconsin football has been relevant nationally.
Yeah.
But maybe it's what have you done for me lately? I don't know.
It definitely is, and I'm a little bit surprised, yet at the same time not. When I lived in South Florida, the actual state of Wisconsin was a little bit of a mystery. Of people would know loosely where it is, know there's cows and cheese, maybe know the Packers, but as far as placing it on the map was sometimes difficult. And I'm not saying that to rip people from Florida. It was just more of if you are in your SEC world like this person is, I don't know if Wisconsin really registers to you. I know that you said Mizzou family there.
Yep.
Alabama, but what Alabama does, and now if the Badgers had beaten Alabama, he would know who they were. So, the Badgers have a lot of work to do to get themselves back up on a national scale because you don't have the NFL players either.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have J.J. Watt, Russell Wilson. You do have Jonathan Taylor. There's some guys out there, but you don't have as many guys popping up at the top of the NFL circles as well. So that actually does tie a little bit into a little bit of groupthink on the show KBN, which is on ESPN Milwaukee. I believe Ben Brust and Brad Nortman and Alex Stroff and I believe even Kyle Wallace have all kind of just decided to land on the same take that the Badgers stink. And that this season is going to make or break the entire program. I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but I do want to get into this before we get to Adam Rittenberg, and I want to leave some time for this. So let's go ahead and play this video, and then let's react to it.
Some Badgers, here's what I fear. If and when the Badgers fall below that, they don't become bowl eligible, and if they win five or less games, I think the support for this team and this organization and coach, it will start to cycle into a spiral that you can't get out of. Because I've already talked to committed Badger fans that said, I might not renew my season tickets.
Oh,
I might not give. I might not contribute to the NIL because I don't believe in the direction of this program. And I'm so distraught over what I see on the field. And then the money dries up and it gets even worse. So you're looking at a program this year that if you do get five wins or loss, there might be no coming back from it. It might be irreparable if you do struggle to have any sort of relevancy and any sort of success this year. That is what I fear for the Wisconsin Badger football team.
Beyond repair is a bit much. Now, could it be beyond repair for Luke Fickell? Sure. Here's the problem I have is that we had Matt LaPay on last week, Riley, and he talked about the ebbs and flows of Badger football under Barry Alvarez. And obviously, Barry came here, the program was dead. But he lifted the program up, got them to a Rose Bowl, and then has set them up for success. But there were dips. There were absolutely dips there for Barry Alvarez and Matt LePay detailed all that at Wisconsin. And I'm sure if we had shows that were a bit more prominent, I know that Stephen Craig, the founders of this company, got some heat from Barry when they got on him a little bit during some of their tough runs, 2001, 5 and 7, followed up by 8 and 6, and then 7 and 6 there, 2003. For the Badgers with a loss to the Music City Bowl and an Alamo Bowl victory in there. Not covering themselves in glory. So like that's part of the story with Barry Alvarez. So I think that's worth addressing in here. But also when you look at the Badgers, Luke Fickell's cardinal sin, I think first of all, is his name's not Jim Leonard.
Yep.
Because we're not having this conversation, Riley, I'll let you go on this one here. We're not having this conversation if Jim Leonard has the exact same record.
Yeah, and I think it's just a Wisconsin thing. Matt LePay alluded to it last week when he was talking. Wisconsin, especially football fans, but Wisconsin fans in general, they love it when you're a Wisconsin guy. We love our own here in Wisconsin. I totally understand. I'm the same way. I support Wisconsin people. However, I don't understand going to these extremes just because he's not a Wisconsin guy. Like, he's from Ohio State. He's not one of us, so to speak. But I feel like once you put on that cardinal and white, once you put on the Motion W, he should be treated as one of us, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was reporting or if Badger fans are just making the assumption, but I think everyone thought it was fait accompli that Jim Leonard was going to be the coach,
yep.
And they feel like Luke Fickell or Max somehow did Jim Leonard dirty. And here's the – I don't think it's a hot take. I don't think – and I hate doing counterfactuals. I don't think the Badgers are dramatically or remarkably better with Jim Leonard.
No.
Maybe there's an extra win in there, a couple wins. But you can make a case with health for Luke Fickell. There's a few more wins. His other sin was that he came in and brought in Phil Longo, which changed up the offense. And then you change up the offense and you don't win. Now, when Gary Anderson came here and changed up the defense, the natives are restless,
yes.
Excuse me. And the 3-4 defense is what Jim Leonard took and ran with after Dave Aranda left. And that is another case of if you're going to make a change, it better work. So Fickell came in, not a Badger, Mark 1 against them. Mark 2 brought in an offense that had Badger fans scared because they wanted more explosiveness, but the air raid, I think, immediately raised up, rightfully so, concerns with Badger fans.
Yeah, and I think Badger fans wanted more explosive plays, but they wanted it to be done our way. Like more explosive runs, more explosive play action passes, like a Russell Wilson, like
yeah,
a 2011
season.
Just be
like you were with Melvin Gordon and Monte Ball and Russell Wilson and just be that team.
Exactly.
And Nick Toon and Jared Aberderis and loaded up football team.
Yeah.
Just be that football team.
You want
team.
The familiarity. And I think you brought up a great point that people really love to glaze over, that Luke Fickell has not had his starting quarterback for an entire season yet. He had Tyler Van Dyke for 2 games in 1 drive, goes out against Alabama, and he looked like a man on a mission. This could just be rewriting history, but he had a great first drive.
He did.
Probably don't beat Alabama, but you at least make a bowl game last year if Tyler Van Dyke is your starting quarterback the entire season. I'm very confident.
Yeah, at a bare minimum, the team has 2 more wins between the last 2 seasons, which then changes the view of this program. But yeah, last year, maybe there's more in there, but Van Dyke was a major difference. Now, again, Fickell and Longo should have realized maybe they didn't work well after the first year. You also can make a case that you're bringing in a better backup QB. Could be another thing that could have solved the problem because
Fair.
We had Joe Thomas on the show a while back, and he said that when you run this offense, the QB is the most important thing. So if that's not going, then you're in big trouble. So like that's the other part of this where they didn't have a solution when the quarterback went down and then the offense sputtered. But you went away from your bread and butter. Braylon Allen didn't look as good, but he was also dinged his only season under Luke Fickell. And that's the other part of it. The cardinal sin was he didn't win right away.
Mm-hmm.
But we have had dips. Brett Bielema had a 7-6 season. His last season as the coach of the Badgers, I believe he won 7 or 8 games, but they got to the Big Ten title game because two other teams were
ineligible.
Yeah, so I don't know how you want to write that one, but that was Brett's last year here. So all these coaches have had ebbs and flows. Paul Chryst was clearly deserved of being fired.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all just had the opportunity to have a hot start. So then you could have a build up here. And it reminds me a little bit of Badger basketball with Greg Gard a couple years ago when they missed the tournament. And rightfully so, most Badger fans were like, no, we got to give him the benefit of the doubt. But then there were some fans who were like, well, maybe we can have some concern. And they were shot down. They were basically shouted down, like, how dare you? And it's still a thing. The fire guard, you're dumb. And I get shouting them down, but at the same time, The only reason I think Greg Gard got the benefit of the doubt, which he deserved, was because he's one of us.
Yep.
Luke Fickell has done more as a head coach as far as reaching higher heights than Greg Gard ever has. He just didn't do it at Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And he built the program at Cincinnati. Greg Gard was handed a great program. Greg Gard deserved the benefit of the doubt. That's not what I'm arguing. But I am hard-pressed to think that Ben Brust would have been, hey, one more missed tournament, and the this team's going to turn away from his guy. Mm-hmm. Brad Nortman, I don't know if he's doing this if it's Jim Leonard. When it's our guy, we are more likely to be like, this is our guy, and we need to sit with them, and we need to go ahead and support them.
Yeah, exactly. And I will admit, full transparency, I was trying my best to shoot down all the Fire Guard people a few years back.
And that's fine,
But I'm the same way with the Fire Fickell people. I don't understand that whatsoever, and I think you should keep the same energy for your head coach unless there is a glaring issue with the program, which I definitely don't see yet with Fickell.
And we're excited that Adam Rittenberg from ESPN will be joining us here soon. I do want to reference a little bit before he hops on. John Blackwell is back, reported by John Rothstein. And then Blackwell put out a video that he is not going pro. And more importantly, he is coming back to Wisconsin. That's 16 points and 5 rebounds per game. Then you have, I don't know what Rhodey's going to be. I think he's a nice player. But Boyd and Blackwell, I think that is a top-tier backcourt in the Big Ten. So I'm excited about that. And let me tell you about Steinhoffel's Memorial Day sale. It has been extended, and we will tell you about that, and then we'll get to Adam Rittenberg. Steinhoffel's Memorial Day sale has been extended. Last chance to save 10% off store-wide, plus get amazing deals like sofas for only $4.99, dining tables at $5.49, and queen beds at just $6.99. Plus, take advantage of Steinhoffel's 18-month 0% financing to make your purchase even more affordable. Steinhoffel's is Wisconsin's furniture and mattress leader. Shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com.
Steinhoffel's Memorial Day sale is on now. Save 10% off store-wide. Plus, get amazing deals like this Sealy mattress, any size, now $199. A desk, $449. A queen bed priced at only $629. This sofa, now $799. And save up to $1,000 on patio furniture. Plus, take advantage of Steinhoffel's 18-month 0% financing. Steinhoffel's is Wisconsin's furniture and mattress leader. Shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com.
And we are lucky enough to be joined by Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. And Adam, thanks so much for taking the time to join us this afternoon.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And I want to get to the really fun article that you wrote about college football head coaches as players. And I counted, I mean, there's like 10 that have ties to the state of Wisconsin that I think we can have some fun talking about. But I wanted to start with, we started the show and people in Wisconsin are getting pretty worried about Luke Fickell. And I understand the start of his reign here at Wisconsin has not been great, but we had Matt LaPay on, voice of the Badgers, last week, and we kind of discussed it. Look, Barry Alvarez had a dip in his time at Wisconsin. Brett Bielema had a 7-6 season. His last season at Wisconsin wasn't fantastic, even though they got to the Big Ten title game, but that was because two teams were suspended. Paul Chris obviously was on the track and ended up getting fired here. So I had three sins that Luke Fickell has here, I think, against the Badgers for Badger fans. Is one, he didn't get off to a hot start like other coaches have. His name is not Jim Leonard, so he's not one of us. And then he came in and he scared a lot of fans by bringing in the air raid. So from the PR side of things, he's probably accidentally made his life a little bit harder. One of them, if he just won, it'd be easier. But not winning and then not being a Badger and not running the offense we're used to, I think is scared some Badger fans.
Right. I think it's important to remember, you know, why he was hired. You know, this is a hire to take you from very good to great to playoff. And so far it's gone the other way. It doesn't mean it can't turn around and still become that. But, you know, I understand the concern because, like you said, he's not one of you and it hasn't looked like you. I think that's the hard part. It's okay to not be one of the people around the program that you're leading. But when the product looks so foreign to the fans who have been used to a certain way that's led to a lot of success that many programs would happily trade places for Wisconsin that's when it becomes uneasy. And obviously there's been a lot of fluidity with the roster, players moving in, moving out. Recruiting has been interesting to watch. And I know, you know, there's probably some level of concern about, is he recruiting the state as much as his predecessors did? So I think these things are all valid. And like, to your point, they all go away if you start winning games. I think the thing that I would say I'm most concerned about, and it has been rectified to a degree, is that he brought in a system that I could not find anyone in the Big Ten who thought it would work, and it didn't work. And that's bad instincts, right? I mean, that's you know, messing with a good thing because you think something else is going to be better. And now you're going to have to go back to more of a traditional Wisconsin-looking offense. And you know, I think Jeff Grimes is a really good coach, and I think they could be on track. But that's a bit troubling that you did something that didn't seem to have a lot of support, at least from coaches I talked to, and their beliefs. And it's good for them, not good for Wisconsin, but their beliefs were validated.
Yes, and I'm optimistic that, I mean, it could be 7 wins for this team just based on their schedule, but 7 wins and looking capable and connected and looking competent in all those games, I think will be helpful. College football playoffs have been kind of wild. They've changed the format for now, straight seeding, 5 spots reserved for conference champs, but seeding is not preferred for the champs anymore. So first, let's get your reaction to that, because then there's reports out there that the whole thing could be blown up. It could work in the Big Ten and the SEC's favor specifically. But the idea of the straight seeding, how do you think that will affect this season?
Yeah, I think it's a move that should be welcomed. The seeding just looked so odd last year, you know, with Boise State sitting there where they were ranked and Ohio State being where they were ranked. And you know, obviously, it didn't benefit the top 4 seeds to have the byes. And so I think as long as the financial piece could be worked out and leagues that were benefiting from having the byes and getting a team directly into the quarterfinals could still be made financially whole, then I think there was support in that room to do more of a straight seeding model. But, you know, the first part of your question is so important, is that, you know, yeah, this is important for 2025, but it's much, much more important what's going to happen in 26 and beyond. And that's when the entire model will look different, you know, from a number of teams perspective, from a how those bids are distributed between the conferences, which is certainly being worked on right now. How decisions are made, and it's obviously going to be easier to push through change, especially if you're a Big Ten or SEC person versus some of the others. Whereas the current model requires unanimous approval to do anything different with the model. So it's definitely going to change quite dramatically here. And I think there's a lot of opinions about expanding already. Are we really needing to expand already? Too many AQs, maybe too few AQs in the minds of some. But this thing is going to look quite different already just a few years into the existence here in 2026.
Adam, Riley Yauch here. I've been the one in contact with you. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. but you mentioned the AQs there in the college football playoff. If that ends up being instituted for 2026 and beyond, what is that going to look like for a team like Wisconsin, who's maybe middle of the pack in the Big Ten, versus, say, a West Virginia, who's struggling in the Big 12? Like, are those teams going to get completely left behind? Is Wisconsin going to be all right just because they're in the Big Ten? How's that going to look?
Well, I think, it depends on the number of AQs. Like, you're going to have 4 AQs in the Big Ten. That's a good thing, I think, for Wisconsin, because they'd have a real opportunity, maybe not to get the first or second, but to compete for the third or fourth spot, and then maybe even an at-large spot. If it goes to 5 and 11, which seems to be getting more conversation this week, you heard that out of the SEC meetings and out of the Big 12 meetings, which are going on right now in Orlando, then it'll get interesting, right? How is Wisconsin evaluated against, Arkansas or South Carolina or LSU? Will the SEC get the benefit of the doubt from the perception that its conference schedule is tougher? And I think the Big Ten should dig in on the idea of, hey, if we're going to do 5 and 11, you have to play the same number of conference games. The idea that, oh, well, 8 is stronger than 9 just because we say so, because our league we say is tougher, that's a very difficult argument, I think, if I'm in a Big Ten seat to go along with, even though I disagree with having more AQs. I want everyone to play 9 conference games. I remember talking with David Shaw about this, the Stanford coach who'd come from the NFL, and he didn't understand how you could have a playoff system set up where there's different pathways to the same system. And so by requiring everyone to play 9 conference games, it does a couple of things. It's better for your fans. It's better for rivalries. And it's a more even playing field to evaluate some of these at-large contenders. So I hope it's 5 and 11 as opposed to with the 4-4-2-2-1 deal. But I also understand the Big Ten and maybe the perspective of others that everyone that's part of that system is getting there the same way. And I really hope, guys, that we have a system that incentivizes scheduling. I know there's a lot of talk this year about how difficult Wisconsin's schedule will be in year three under Luke. But it's a really fun schedule. Like, this is something you should embrace. You know, what happened last year with Indiana, it's getting a lot of discussion this week. I really believe that will be a very rare exception to have a team go through a conference like the Big Ten and be challenged so little by its schedule. I don't think that's going to happen as often as people think. And I would hope that Indiana and everyone else in the conference will still be interested in having those exciting non-conference games, in addition to having, obviously, the nine Big Ten games, which it's not your fault if they're tough. It's not your fault if they're easy. That's just the way it goes some years.
Yeah, and Wisconsin will catch some breaks with that Big Ten schedule. I mean, as you talked about, Indiana kind of caught it, but I do think in general having more conference games will be good. You wrote a story, college football head coaches as players, and it was fun to read through. And first I'll ask you this, how fun was it to kind of come up with this? I saw 11 names with ties to either the University of Wisconsin or the state of Wisconsin, but which was kind of a fun little bit for us to see here. But how did you come up with the idea of putting this together, and how much fun was it to put together?
Well, it's actually a piece that we've done every basically 5 years,
okay,
you know, when the coaching group turns over. So we've done it in different forms. I've actually ranked all 120 or 130 coaches before. But what we did this year is the guys who didn't play college football, you know, there's really no way to rank those.
Yeah.
I mean, so we kind of put them in their own category, and we did that with a number of different categories. And then I got to really the top 30, and then you're really pouring through some resumes, and there's a lot of great ones to consider, both in major conference programs, and then, you know, even at the small conference level. Kalen DeBoer was an incredible athlete at an NAIA program in Sioux Falls, and there's a number, you know, James Franklin had a great career. Ryan Day had a great career just at smaller schools. And so how do you compare those with guys who, you know, performed in the Power Five, but they maybe never earned an all conference? Luke Fickell was actually a really interesting case for me.
Yep.
Because Luke had a really good career, was kind of an iron man for Ohio State, played, started 50 games, which was a team record, but was never like an all Big Ten level player. So how do you, you know, compare that to someone at a smaller school that set a bunch of records and was a multi-time all-conference or all-America type athlete. So that's where it got to be fun. Obviously, with, you know, Deion Sanders and Eddie George at the very top, that, you know, you're dealing with some elite level athletes. I mean, Deion, honestly, whatever you think of him, is one of the greatest athletes in this country in the last 50 years. And so that was a pretty easy one to have at the top.
Absolutely. Some of the names that stood out to me that, I'm not saying, again, I'm not putting Fickell on the hot seat, but there are names that just have Wisconsin ties. I believe even Jason Eck's name was floated as maybe he'd come in as offensive coordinator. Obviously, they brought in Jeff Grimes, but Jason Eck ties to Barry Alvarez. Sean Lewis ties to Barry Alvarez's Badgers. Then you have Dave Aranda, Dave Doran, some former coaches at Wisconsin, along with Justin Wilcox as well, and Thomas Hammack. And then the other name is Lance Leipold, who coached at Whitewater, was a GA at Wisconsin back in the day. So some interesting names in coaching circles, whether they were former Badger assistants or former Badger players, who are doing really well as coaches. Obviously, Brett Bielema and Jay Norvell is from Madison, and his brother played for the Badgers. So there are just a lot of ties to Wisconsin and the Badgers in college football. So it seems to be a good breeding ground for good coaching, whether you're a player or a assistant here.
Definitely. And there's a number of coaches, I would say, is expanding beyond Wisconsin, that are kind of from the Midwest, went to small schools. But the state of Wisconsin has really produced a lot of them. I mean, Jay Norvell grew up, I think he told me, you know, he could see Camp Randall Stadium from his house. His father, Merritt, obviously played for Wisconsin many years ago. There's a lot of connections to that program and to the state as a whole. I mean, Lance Leipold is another great example, you know, a great college player. And obviously did incredible things as a head coach at Whitewater before moving up to the FBS. You know, what do you do with him as opposed to, you know, a pretty good player at a Group of Five program or someone who made it to a Big Ten school but was only a part-time starter or didn't earn any accolades. So, I think Lance is a great one. I mean, obviously some newer coaches from Wisconsin like Jake Dickert, you know, now at Wake Forest, David Braun, who's at Northwestern. You know, guys who played at smaller schools but are from the state and are now leading, you know, Power Four programs.
Yeah, it was fun to see your thoughts on it, but then also get a reminder of like, wow, there's just a lot of coaches out there, including, I mean, not that Phil Longo's beloved here, but Phil Longo at Sam Houston, again, a tie to Wisconsin. With the actual football program, not quite setting a win and loss, but I think Badger fans, and this almost goes back to Brett Bielema more than even Paul Christ, because Paul, I don't think it was his personality, and in Gary, they had a tougher schedule, I feel like, early in his career, early in the season, but coming out and just kicking the crap out of some teams we have not seen from Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. So I think that's part of it, too, that even the games that they should be able to win by a lot, it doesn't happen a ton. And, I'm an open Bears fan here, and Ben Johnson's talked about, hey, we want to come in and kick the crap out of some teams. And I think fans would like to see the Badgers, if they play a school that they're supposed to win, let's say they're a 14-point favorite, go out and win by 20. You don't need to do the Bielema put up 80 on someone, but I think fans would feel better. From your perspective, what are you looking for defensively and offensively in those first couple games, I guess mainly the first two before they, I think they play Alabama week three, that can make you feel like this team has turned a corner and could click this year?
Yeah, well, I think Wisconsin fans have seen it. You know, that style of offense, I know sometimes people describe it as boring or traditional, but when that style of offense clicks, it's one of the more beautiful things to watch as a fan, because you can just physically dominate an opponent.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin's done that at times over the years, and there's really nothing that the defenses can do about it. And I think that's what you want to see, is a team that can run the ball and be in favorable down and distance and score the ball in the red zone. And really kind of take the will of their opponent. So I think, you know, Miami of Ohio has been a really good MAC program. Chuck Martin's done a great job there. That won't be an easy game. Obviously, Derek Mason is in his second year at Middle Tennessee, but those are games you have to have. When you look at the rest of Wisconsin's home schedule, there just aren't very many gimmies. Maryland, maybe, but then you got, you know, Iowa, Ohio State, Washington, which will be an improved team, and then obviously Brett coming back at the end of the season, which should be a fun one with his best Illinois team potentially. It's a way that they'll at least frame it going into the year. So, those first two are big to win, but also how it looks is going to be important, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And then defensively, you know, what is Wisconsin? I mean, you hire a defensive-oriented coach in Luke Fickell. You know, Mike Tressel has been there as a coordinator now for the last 2 years. But I think people are still asking, like, what's their identity on defense? You knew what it was under Jim Leonard. You knew what it was briefly under Justin Wilcox, who you mentioned, certainly under Dave Aranda during his time there, and Dave Doran even going back many, many years. So they've had a brand, and they need to create that identity again.
I think there could be a case made that if Grimes comes in and runs the offense, and let's say the offense is functioning and just looks cohesive, it allows Fickell, and he wants to obviously be the CEO-type coach, the whole team. That's kind of how Brett was when he was here. He had Paul Christ, he had Dave Doran. I mean, those are great assistants. He could kind of oversee everything. But I do think it allows Fickell to lean into making sure the culture's right, but then also the defensive side of the ball. Like, I think there's a value to, if a guy like Fickell can fully just say, I got a head coach of the offense, like Paul was for Brett, then it's like I can focus on what I'm good at as far as defense and culture building. And I think that could be a under-considered thought, that if Grimes is competent and the team looks good offensively, it allows Fickell to do more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's hard to spend too much time in Luke's role or anyone in that role on one side of the ball, but he's a defensive guy, and that's where his expertise lies. And I think that's what Wisconsin fans want to see more of here going forward. And so, right, if Grimes, who's, again, been an offensive coordinator at a number of different programs, and he obviously has a background in offensive line play, they feel like their staff under him will really help and assist him. That might allow Luke to spend a little bit more time on the defensive side. But I think in his position, given what's happened in the first 2 years, what you said about the culture building and setting a tone and having a united locker room is important, because at times, you saw it a little bit, even in 2023, that Northwestern game, at times last year, they just haven't looked like a Wisconsin team in terms of how they've fought in games. And that's troubling, because that used to be a given. Whether the coach was Brett Bielema, Gary Anderson, or Paul Christ, you knew what, or obviously Barry Alvarez, you knew what to expect from Wisconsin, even in a game where things weren't going well. Under this regime, it's looked a little bit more delicate in those moments, and I think that's what needs to change. Like, if they're down 14 early against Alabama, how do they respond? You know, if Michigan jumps on him, how do they respond? Like that's what I'm going to be looking for, because you know, what we've seen out of the first 2 years hasn't been overly encouraging in those moments.
Adam, I got one more before we let you go. I know you're not in the hot take industry, but with the tough schedule this year, how many wins do you have for Wisconsin this season?
Yeah, just going through the schedule, I really think the important stretch, guys, is going to be, you know, after Alabama, you know, with Maryland coming in, an opportunity to possibly go 3-1 and maybe 4-0 if you're able to upset the Tide, but at worst 3-1. And then you get that Michigan game. You know, Michigan is still, in my mind, very much in a transition phase under Sharon Moore. You're probably going to be going with a freshman quarterback and Bryce Underwood. Questions on their offensive line, questions at receiver. Like, that's a winnable game. And if you win that game, then you have your rivalry game coming up against Iowa. Certainly a chance to redeem yourself. But the problem is, if you drop those two games and then you get Iowa, and then the schedule gets obviously a lot tougher with Ohio State, Oregon, and Washington back to back to back. That's when you're in Indiana and Illinois and Minnesota. I mean, the second half of the schedule is brutal. So they have to start off well. You know, I see them probably in the 5-6 win range again. But I think the key will be, what do you do after Alabama? And are you able to go, you know, 2-1 or potentially 3-0 during that stretch of Maryland, Michigan, Iowa? If it's 1-2 or worse, you could be looking at a really ugly record for Luke in year three.
Adam, we really appreciate all the info and your time. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. You can read his story about college football head coaches as players on ESPN.com. Some other great stuff up there as well. That was a fun story and a great interview there with Adam. If you miss any of that, you can listen back on the ESPN Wisconsin app. And obviously, we are on the ESPN Wisconsin YouTube page as well. We are efforting Rob Wheelwright. Is that where we're at right now? So we'll give Rob a few minutes here, and if he can join the show, we will. Looks like Rob is getting connected right now, so we'll get to him in a minute. I can share this little tidbit that Riley put in the notes here, that anonymous Big Ten coach weighs in on Wisconsin. This is according to Athlon Sports. And here's what they had to say about the failed Phil Longo experiment, which is, nothing about the offense made sense here, the anonymous assistant said. Phil Longo moving on benefits everyone involved, and if they bounce back, they become a more modern version of that classic Wisconsin power run offense. You'll wonder why they ever made the move in the first place. Grimes is a great hire. They need to get back to Wisconsin football this season, and they've got a young backfield that can do it. They're talented in some spots, but they're very young, the coach said. Fickle is the guy, but the offensive issues have overshadowed the overall plan so much that it's easy to see why some folks might lose faith. I think they just overreached trying to modernize the program schematically. So that does, I think, give you hope that it was just an error that they're not going to compound. Riley, are we ready for Rob, or do we need a minute here? Okay, Rob Wheelwright is joining the show now. We are excited to join him, a former Badger, and I think at some points, Rob, a fan favorite here. But Rob, why don't you tell us what you've been up to over the last few years? Obviously, you had 18 starts and 47 games with the Badgers, a great Badger career. But what have you been up to since you've left Wisconsin?
So after I left Wisconsin, I tried to, you know, play professionally. And then I got right into teaching.
Okay.
So I've been teaching since 2019. And then I got in the coaching world maybe right during COVID. Mm-hmm. I was coaching at a Division II school, Ohio Dominican University, right here in my hometown. And I coached there for 2 years. And then I joined my brother, my oldest brother, Michael Bell, at East High School. And we went, we made it to the semi-regionals. We went 10-2 that season at East High School. That's maybe the first time in maybe 50 years that they've hosted two playoff games. And then the last year with them, we went 8-3. I was the offensive coordinator there. And then luckily, my old alma mater, Walnut Ridge, had a head coaching job position open. And I think I waited to the last day, honestly, to put in for that job and for that position. I ended up getting it. And then last year, for my first year, I was coach of the year, and we went 10-1.
That's fantastic. We actually just had Adam Rittenberg on, and we were talking about former whether Badger coaches or Badger players who are coaching at the college football level, whether that Jason Eck and Sean Lewis, some guys who are coaching as head coaches who played here at Wisconsin, and there's more who played back in the day. With that transition into coaching, is that something you knew you wanted to do when you were playing, or is that kind of pop up after the fact when you got into teaching?
I think it was after the fact. I think my old high school coach kind of was like, hey, I heard that this position is open, a wide receiver position was open, and I think you should do it. And I think he had a great connection with that head coach. And, I reached out to the head coach and just told him who I was and, kind of gave down my resume of who I am and what I've done. And I kind of got into it. And once I got into it, I love the game of football. So It was just like it felt like I was playing again. So that was something great for me to experience early on, and then really finding the love for coaching and stuff.
Who are some coaches that you had who influenced you as a coach?
I would say, if I start off, I would say my oldest brother, my brother Michael, mm-hmm. Michael Bell. He's a head coach now, but he coached me in Little League. He kind of, playing on your brother's team, you get the ball a lot. So, I mean, of course, that was my favorite coach.
Yeah.
And then once I got to high school, Coach Brian Maddox, he was we had a few great guys that he sent off to school. Austin Traylor, who played at Wisconsin with me. Mm-hmm. Malik Harrison, who plays for the Steelers. Derek Forrest, who plays for the Commanders. Julius Wood, who plays for the Titans. We all played under Coach Maddox. Those are like three guys that are currently playing in the NFL. So he was really big. And then once I got to college, I fell in love with Coach Beatty. Coach Beatty was there for a short stint, maybe my freshman and sophomore year. Really good receiver coach under Jerry Aberderis. He was able to – I'm sure he coached Percy Harvin, Trayvon Austin. Those were some of the guys that he coached before I did. So I had a huge liking to him. Coach Ted Gilmore, who was the receiver coach my junior and senior year. I love those guys. Those guys pushed me to be a better person. And, of course, Coach Paul Chris. I mean, we had a great relationship. That was one of my favorite coaches of all time. And they just showed me a different way of loving the game and playing the game the right way.
One of your teammates, at least on the defensive side of the ball, Chris Orr, coaching linebackers with the Chiefs. He was a guy that did a lot of shows with us, and we got to kind of see him. He seemed like one of those guys, and it could be someone you could model yourself after. Obviously, he got into coaching and was at HBS school last year and has kind of quickly moved his way up. When you were around Chris, was it one of those things where, like, this guy is going to be a coach? Because he seems to have that just personality that just screams.
Of course. I mean, Chris, Chris was a little bit younger when I got there, but me and Chris were very close. We were always cool, talking and clowning and, working hard. He was always like big energy guy, worked hard, was loud, was smart, and he pushed you. And you know what I'm saying? So just to see him, what he's doing, man, I commend him. I'm cheering for him. I'm just happy to see these guys, some of the guys that I got to be, got to play with, that's kind of giving back and coaching. So, I mean, I can't wait to see what's in store for him in his coaching future.
One of the things that at Wisconsin that I think we all hope continues under Luke Fickell was that it seems to set you up for life after football, whether, yourself and obviously plenty of other players are doing well. How did Wisconsin, your time at Wisconsin, because one of the things that I think is great with the NIL is that the players get the opportunity to earn some extra money and make money off their name and likeness and not have just the school decide who gets to make money and they make all the money off of it. One of the things that I did a little chalk talk with Melvin Gordon and James White a couple weeks ago, and Melvin just asked, matter-of-factly, how does anyone ever graduate with these NILs? How do these, so that's the one negative here is that you've set yourself up for life after football. Now, you didn't get the NIL, which is unfortunate, but you did get the opportunity to stay at a school, get a degree, and move forward and have the career you have now. So that there is that trade-off there. How do you see that as someone who played in the non-NIL era, and there is a value to actually getting a degree from a lot of schools, because most guys aren't going pro. You were really good. You got a cup of coffee with the Chiefs, but you still didn't go pro. You used your degree to make your way in the world.
No, so, like, I think me, Melvin, Austin Traylor, Kenzel Doe, like, we sit around and talk about, like, maybe we were 10 years too early. And I think when I look at it now, I love the era that I played in, the, you know, the no NIL deal, because I think my focus was more so on, you know, playing football and graduating. Those was the only type of things. It wasn't necessarily I wasn't chasing no money. My whole focus was, you know, especially for my parents, was you need to get a degree first, you know, and I kind of tried to balance that. And, you know, sometimes it could have been I'm trying to go professional and I'm still going to get a degree. So I love that era because, I mean, it just made us work harder. And I think now, I mean, you do have guys now that might be chasing money or, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, they could possibly set up themselves financially after college just in a better situation. Because, you know, once we graduated college, it was like, all right, we don't owe anything, but we don't have anything to show.
Right.
And now they might not graduate college, but they got something to show. Hey, I went to college and I got some money for me to be able to, you know, financially be stable in life at an earlier age. Then instead of, you know, going right into the workforce, I mean, now you have some time to kind of maybe follow in your footsteps of being an entrepreneur, having your own things going on instead of working for somebody else. So, I mean, it really depends on your home life, your upbringing of how you can for sure, like, manage your money and see what's going on in that area so you make the right decisions.
One of the things that I hope these schools are doing, will do more of, is setting kids up for success. If they are getting this NIL money, how are you investing it? Are you properly making sure you're getting taxed on it? And how could you invest it? You know, connecting them with people that could help them as entrepreneurs in the future. So to your point, I do hope that is something that will grow as the NIL grows to set these young athletes up for success. Rob, at Wisconsin, what was, as a player, what was kind of your moment where you're like, this is going to stick with me forever when you were as a player?
Oh, that's a great question. I would probably say my moment of like welcome to college. I'm going to give two stories. I'll give my first story of like my welcome was my freshman year in practice. I think I had a drag route and, you know, I was getting some reps. You know, I'm trying to make a name for myself early, and I had a drag route, and Chris Borland met me before I got to the other side of that drag route, and he just laid me out. And I'm like, man, that's a pass. You know, I kind of get up like, man, that's a pass interference. And he just looked at me and he just went back to the huddle and he didn't respond to nothing I said.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a dang, like, okay, I gotta watch out.
Right. Yeah.
I wasn't used to that. So that was like my welcome to college moment. Like, okay, they're not playing. These are grown men. And, you know, Chris Borland was an amazing athlete.
Yep.
Probably one of the best athletes I got to see and play with in person. But I think during the games, it was my sophomore year against Minnesota, against my brother Ernie Wheelwright's old team, Minnesota, to go up in the fourth quarter. I ran the corner post. And I murdered this guy on this route. I mean, I had been practicing, you know. I think my coach Beatty was talking about, you know, I think he put it in the paper. They asked him, like, who was your best route runners? Like, who's your best route runners? He said Aberdeers, and he said Wheelwright. And when he said that I was second, I mean, I was pushing Abby daily to be better than him.
Yeah.
Because I was pushing him daily. And I mean, he made me so much better just learning from me. But I finally had the opportunity to showcase my talents, and, you know, I made the best out of it, had a catch, sealed the deal, and to beat Minnesota as a sophomore. So,
one of the ones you didn't say, but I'd be remiss since the Badgers face Notre Dame at Lambeau Field next season. What was it like to have that game at Lambeau?
Oh man, I mean that was amazing. That was literally amazing. That was what, my senior year,
I believe. So yeah,
we played. Yep,
yeah, 2016.
My senior year. Yep, big game. I don't think we were even ranked. I don't even think we were ranked. I think LSU might have been ranked, but yep. Top five.
Yeah, five.
Yeah.
I honestly will say, like, we worked so hard that offseason. Like, as a group, a lot of us didn't go home. A lot of us stayed up there, and we just worked. We just kept working because we knew that we playing against LSU, top program in Wisconsin, at our NFL stadium. So, I mean, going in there and going in that game, I think we always had the talent. And I always thought we was, you know, of course the underdogs, but I just knew we were a better team than them. You know, they of course they had some great players. They had what first rounder. I forget what Fournette went first or second round.
First, yeah.
White went first round. Yeah. Like these dudes were studs. But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we put a beating to them and we got out of there with a win. So man, that was an amazing feeling, especially start off our senior year. 1-0.
Would you say that's the most memorable win of your career, or what victory, what moment outside of burning the Minnesota corner stands out to you most throughout your career?
I will say I don't know if it's our best victory, but I would say at Nebraska, my junior year at Nebraska, I think we won by a field goal.
Was that the Gaglianone like super long field
goal?
Yes,
yeah. Yes, that was a and like we were throwing the ball that game too. So, you know, no Melvin Gordon, no Corey Clement was hurt. You know, I think we had Daray back there, but we weren't running the ball that much. So we had to throw the ball to win the game. And I mean, we felt good. I know we felt good. I was happy. I think I might have had 6 catches that game. So that was probably one of my most catches in the game. But no, we had a crazy drive that fourth quarter, maybe an 80-yard drive all the way down. And then, you know, Rafael makes this field goal. And, I mean, their stadium, I mean, from pre-game, they were – fans was already out there. Maybe at least 5,000 fans was already out there pre-game, cheering, booing, saying whatever. And then, I mean – it was just the back and forth. And, you know, they play a jump around, too. It's not like the – it's like the – I forget, the crisscross jump around. Like,
oh, jump, yep.
And they scored on us, and I'm talking about that stadium erupted. Like, it was amazing. Like, and it was like – again, this fourth quarter, they're winning, and it was so crazy that us on the sideline was even kind of bobbing our heads. Yeah. Like, wow, they're turned.
Yeah.
And then literally we go down and score that field goal, and it's silence. It was complete silence. I think that was it was a really good game. I know Nebraska always played this tough. They always had those safeties coming down and hitting. And, I mean, that was one of the games where our coach was like, hey, tighten up them helmets. We got to go dig out them safeties for our running backs. And, I mean, that was – I think that was probably one of my favorite games and favorite wins that we had during my stint at Wisconsin.
That was a fantastic story and a fantastic win back in the day. Last thing I have for you, Rob, on the outside looking in, Badger football under Fickell has not got off to a hot start. I do think a couple things work against them. I think we're all guilty of this. One, he's not a former Badger, so I think fans get a little bit concerned. He brought in an offense that I don't think anyone thought was going to work here at Wisconsin, and then he didn't get off to the hot start that, you know, Brett got off to, and even Gary and Paul. So those three things are working against them, but I don't think those are necessarily death nails for the program.
No, for sure. I mean, and again, there's for Wisconsin, big tradition school. I love that we try to bring the change, but I don't think we don't need to overthink certain things. I mean, we need to find a way to recruit better. We need to get those guys in there. I don't know how, you know, Wisconsin is a tough school to get into.
Yep.
I can attest for that. I thought I was very smart until I got to Wisconsin. They was like, I don't know. Might need you guys to send some letters, send some of your teachers, send some letters so you can for sure get in. But we got to figure out a way to recruit.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to hold us back. I think we got the tools. We got the facilities. We got the love. We got the tradition. I mean, we got everything that you possibly need. You know, we have a campus. We have a college town. That's not one of the best college towns that I've ever got to experience and be around. So, I mean, if we can get those guys there, those top-tier athletes, and, you know, we kind of get out of the, you know, the stint of we recruiting close and we recruiting these type of guys. And, you know, nothing's wrong with that because I wasn't a top recruit.
Yep.
And we've had, you know, walk-on guys go to the NFL and longevity in the NFL, but we just got to figure out ways to recruit these better these better players, because there's you're going against 5-star guys each week and out. Like, I mean, it makes it tough.
Absolutely.
It makes coaching a lot harder.
Yeah, and you know something. I mean, you know something about that now. Now that you're a coach, you got to get those.
That's the thing. Even in, at the high school level, for me, is just like, hey, like if those guys are better than us, that means I have to coach a lot harder.
Yeah,
and I tell my players that, like, this team right here on paper, they look better than us. They got more guys going here. They got more stars than us. So we got to coach better. And it's tough if you don't have, if you always on the short end of that stick. And you know, you don't got too many guys. You don't got a 6'5" receiver. You ain't got a big running back. I mean, it's tough. So I think if we can recruit, I think we'll be fine. I mean, it's only so many plays that you can run. It's only so many defenses that you can run. You need to have the right guys in those positions. And I think in my era, we were recruiting these guys. Guys that wasn't Wisconsin guys.
Yeah.
Guys who were like, I don't really know if Wisconsin's my school, but they end up going there and we end up showing them like, hey, this is where we need to recruit from. These are the type of guys that we need. And I think if we can get back onto that, I think, I mean, we're always gonna be a good team. We just gotta recruit the right people, man.
Rob, great stuff. Really appreciate your time and best of luck for your upcoming football season then.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We went 3-8 the year before I got there. This past year we went 10-1. So we got tons of juniors coming back. So I'm excited to see what we can do in year two. I hope the best for my program and Wisconsin, man. We cheer on Wisconsin. Got my coat right here.
Nice.
Big Wisconsin guy. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. So I got to talk to a bunch of Ohio State fans daily.
Yeah.
It's tough for me out here.
So oh, yeah.
We got to get some, we got to get some wins. We got to win them big games. So I can get back to, walking around like we the big dogs again. So
yeah, and if in your case, if we win games with their coach from Ohio State, even better. You know,
for sure. And I mean, when I was being recruited from Wisconsin, Fickell was at Ohio State, and he used to always come in and to our high school and recruit and talk to me and chop it up. And I remember telling him, I think the week after I committed, he came to our school and he was just like, Wisconsin? I was like, Wisconsin. So, I mean, it's crazy to see him go to Wisconsin, man. I think when he came here for a coaching clinic, I went and spoke to him and just kind of reintroduced myself again to him and him, Mike Trussell, as well, because Mike Trussell was at Michigan State at the time when I was being recruited from him as well. So, I mean, it's kind of good to see guys that got to recruit me that's coaching at my old school now. So, I mean, I feel like they get the right recruits and get the alumni involved. I think we can bring it back into something that we like. Get a guy like Chris Orr back there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like he that's a guy that needs to be back in that building around that campus, man, because his energy, his love for the game and his love for, Badger Nation is tremendous. So just to see some guys, some familiar faces that, fan favorites. You know what I'm saying? That can fill up the stands. You know, it's all about that, how you play it and how you dress it up. So, man, I wish them the best. And, man, we rooting for them all the way in Columbus, Ohio.
All right, Rob, thank you so much for your time.
No problem, man. Thank you guys for having me.
All right, that's former Badger wide receiver Rob Wheelwright. Exciting stuff from him. And congratulations for him on his coaching career and a teaching career taking off there in the state of Ohio. And he's repping the Badgers in the state of Ohio. So fantastic stuff.
Love to see that. Yeah. Going to be that much sweeter if we get the win over Ohio State this year and he can flaunt that a little bit. That'd be nice.
Yeah, we'll have to reach back out to Rob to see if he can hop on and talk a little trash for us as well. This has been the Jump Around 3.0.